child, and I had the hardest time understanding the lady sits down here on the fifth row this morning. When I was a little bitty child, my mother to me was the most brilliant person in the entire world. And I got about 13 years of age, and my mother seemed to me to be having some kind of a setback. It appeared to me that she was having mental problems. And I gave serious consideration. In fact, my sister and I talked about having her admitted. I got very concerned about her. But I'm happy to say that since I've been older, I've been able to help her. But I can recall as a kid wondering why certain things had to be. Funny thing, what sticks in your mind, isn't it? I can recall my mother said to me, "You sit on the front." And I never could understand that. Our pastor was a big fellow, about 6'4", and he ran around while he preached. He never stood behind the pulpit for long. He'd sometimes run up and down the altar, and a lot of times he'd stand with his hand on that pew right there. Well, that's where I sat, right there, and I had to sit there. And since the man out the folks are here, I think I'll use a big word. My pastor expectorated while he preached. Now, you Howell Dentistry students, you know what that is. That means spit. So, pastor, he had slobber while he preached. And I never could understand why my mother made me sit on the front row. Why couldn't I sit on the third row or the fourth? I mean, I couldn't understand why she expectorated me to sit on the front row all the time. Mother used to say, "Son, make your bed. Make your bed." Now, I'll be honest. I still don't understand that. I never have understood why anybody makes a bed. Unless you're going to have company. Now, would you tell me why, if you sleep in the bed, and you get up in the morning, and nobody walks in that room to see the bed made all day long, and you go back at night, sleep in the same bed, could you tell me one good reason for making that stupid thing? Now listen, think about that. If it takes you 5 minutes to make it, and 5 minutes to unmake it, that's 10 minutes. Now, there are 300 million people in America. 300 million, if there are 100 million beds, or more than that, if there are 200 million beds, at 10 minutes, that's 20 million hours a day wasted. Think about that. You're not thinking about that. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand why. My mother said to me, "When you see a girl standing up, always give her your seat." I couldn't understand that. I still have a hard time figuring that. But I did it. Still do it. I couldn't understand it. Especially if that girl was my sister. Now that, to me, a pretty girl, that was all right. But my sister, I never could understand that. Let's say, always let Earlene go first. All Earlene. Always let Earlene go first. I couldn't understand it. Most of the things that Mother taught me that I didn't understand then, I understand now. I've not always understood what God does. I've not always understood why He does what He does. I can't understand today why the little lady that sang the solo part a while ago had to get the news. I had to sit in the hospital room and tell her that her husband was killed in a car wreck. I can't understand that. I can't understand why I had to go out and to a house with a little girl, Tammy. I've adopted Tammy as one of my daughters. They're having a hard time. Mrs. Lee won't give me rights. Right, you know, I've adopted her. Yes, I forked her for the weekends or something, you know. But anyway, I didn't understand why I had to tell little Tammy that her daddy was dead. I said, Tammy, your daddy's in heaven. No, she said, my daddy said, where? I said, no, Tammy, something happened to your daddy this morning, and he's in heaven now. She said, no, he's at the house, and this is the cottage. He's at the cottage. Where? I can understand that. But after a half a century almost of living, 80% of that time of knowing God, though I cannot always understand what he does, I'd like to serve notice on you this morning. Whatsoever the king does is right. What he does is right. I love to tell about the old man. My folks have been here for a while. Heard me tell this. Down in Tampa, Florida, I was preaching down there under Brother Roloff's tent, Tampa, Florida. Great crowd came that night. After I finished preaching, an old preacher came down. His shoulders were drooped. His hair was white, what he had. His face was wrinkled. His brow was furrowed. His hands were palsied, and his step was unsure. But the old preacher came down and said, Dr. House, could I have prayer meeting with you? And I said, yes, you may. We knelt at the altar in the sawdust of the old tent. And the old preacher began to pray. And he said, dear Lord, I hate power. I hate flour. I hate flour. I know good night, old man's cracking up. He said, I hate baking powder. I hate baking powder. Oh, I hate baking powder. I never heard prayer like that in my life. A lot of things I hate, but I don't tell the Lord about them. I hate shortening. Oh, I hate shortening. And then the old man began to tremble with his lips. There was a quiver in his voice. He said, but Lord, put them all together and mix them all up and put them in the oven and brown them. And a smile came across his face as the tears coming out of his eyes. He said, I sure do like hot biscuits. Now what's he saying? He's teaching us Romans 8:28. And we know that all things work together for good for those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. Now, it may be isolate an event of life and look at it, it may look bad. Isolate a circumstance of your life and look at it, it may look bad. But if you love God, and if you're in God's will, take all those circumstances and put them together and mix them up. You'll find whatsoever the king does is right. It's right. I could not understand as a kid being born poor. I can understand why I did not have what other boys had. I can understand why other boys got bicycles for Christmas and I didn't. I can understand why other boys got toys and I didn't. Cowboy suits and I didn't. Footballs and basketballs and baseballs and I didn't. I understand it now. I understand it. I can understand why my dad left our home. Why I didn't have a father at home with me. I understand it now. I don't have any little boys and girls in this church, that's our bus kids, have come by my office, young people by my office, without out in the mothers and fathers that care for them. And in many cases, don't even know who their dads are. They tell me the story. You don't understand. You don't understand. Many folks in this room this morning have fathers they've never seen. You don't understand how many folks in this room this morning have dads that they have not seen for years. I understand it now. God wanted me to be able to identify with you and you to identify with me. I understand it years ago when I, on May 13th, 1950, on Mother's Day, on a Sunday afternoon, when we stood around in a little circle down in Italy, Texas, and lowered my dad's body into the grave. I couldn't understand it. I put my head in my hands when I heard about it, and I said, Lord, this isn't right. I'm a preacher, and I'm trying to serve you. My old dad died, not converted, an alcoholic. I can't understand it. I understand it now. Anybody that knows anything about my ministry knows that the death of my dad has been the force of my ministry. I preached a sermon one time here on the subject, my dad died for you. My dad died for you. In a real sense, he did. My dad died for every preacher who's been influenced by this ministry. My dad died for every person who's been saved by this ministry, and every church that's been built, and every soul that's been saved across the country. I understand it now. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. I, after 50 years of life, I'm convinced more than I ever have been convinced that whatsoever the King does, it's right.
Amen.
I understand it when I had to work. I understand when I had to leave Miller Road Baptist Church and come to Garland, Texas. I come to Hammond. I could understand it. I could understand it for 16 long months. I'd wake up in the night crying. Francis Knoll and his wife sat down last Sunday night in the service, Sunday night before last maybe, in the service. And I loved him like a brother and still do. And he wasn't well, and his family was also sick. And I can recall dreaming in the middle of the night about Francis or his wife or the boys being sick. And I'd wake up, I'd be standing up in the bed crying and saying, I've got to get to them. They need me. I could understand it then. I understand it now. I understand whatsoever the King does is right. I've learned it through the years. And may I say to you this morning, if there comes into your life some baking powder, or there comes into your life some lard or shortening, there comes into your life some baking soda, when it comes, it tastes bad, and you say, I don't want any more of that. I can't understand that. It's hard for me to comprehend that. The Lord's not good to me. Let me tell you something, brother. Our King never makes a mistake. Our King never says, uh-oh. Our King never stumbles nor falls. He never makes a mistake. The Lord's way is the best way. The King may come to your life, and he may permit the flashing of steel on the highway. He may permit the sound of sirens to come. He may permit the blood of someone dear to you to be spread on the highway. He may permit you to go to the hospital as Mrs. Salee did and hear the pastor say, he's calm. He may permit that. But the King may permit. If he may permit a child that's taken from your breast and that crib that's empty, he may permit that. Or he may allow, as he often does in this church, and I don't always understand why, he may allow that child of yours to get some leukemia germ. As we have parents sitting in this room this morning with apprehensive hearts that are broken in two because the little child has leukemia, then the Lord may allow it. He may permit it. And you may say, I can't understand why it's my child. This morning, Dr. Bill Rash sits down at the Bill Rash Ranch. I think about him every day and love him every day and take some time to ask God to bless him every day. That big, strong, athletic man, that man who's been an outdoorsman and a horseman and a rancher for these years and a faithful preacher of the gospel, now sits this morning down at the Bill Rash Ranch in a wheelchair with his right side paralyzed, and he can't smile all the way across, and he can't speak, and he can't preach. And I think about him. I never walk in the pulpit to preach anymore on Sunday morning without pausing to say, oh God, bless Dr. Bill, that it may be soon, maybe soon, that in your providential wisdom, it may be soon that I'll preach my last sermon. Oh God, bless Dr. Bill, and may I this morning give it all I have. I don't understand that. I could not understand it. He could not. And that little girl of his suddenly got 106 temperature or so over here in Wheaton, Illinois, and suddenly her eardrums were eaten up with a fever, and she's been deaf all of her life, and yet look around the whole world at thousands and thousands of deaf people who never would have heard the gospel. I'm sure they say, whatsoever the King does is right. Trust him. Trust him. He knows what's best. God's way is the best way. I can understand. Or the King may allow your little girl, Dr. Helton, to go through open heart surgery. Little Leah's been up and down so much. I felt it was in the office of the day. We were having a meeting. Then the phone call came, emergency call. And they came to the door, knocked on the door, and knocked. They said, I felt him came back and said, preacher, said, Leah's worse. She said, a back set. Now she's not. It's been several days ago. She's much better now, thank God. And he put his head on my shoulder, and we wept together. And Dr. Evans was there, and we couldn't understand it. No, we couldn't understand it. But blessed be God, there's one thing I know. Whatsoever the King does is right. I know that. I can't comprehend the fact why sometimes the King will come down and allow a husband to be blinded in World War II and never to see a son, and then be taken in death after a long siege of illness. And the King may come to your house soon. He may come to your house like he did the Dust home recently and take away that good man last night. The deacons gave me a little birthday a time. And I miss Blanford. I missed him. I loved him. And I remember so many times we as deacons, like brothers in the Lord, last night I came out, and Louis Olivari, one of our Spanish college students, Spanish-speaking college student, he's the guard around here, and he said, it must be awful nice to have folks like you like that, preacher. He'd been out in the hallway, here against the door, you know, and he said, must be awful nice. And I said, yes. I said, those men are like my brothers, Louis. He said, Pastor, he said, is that really the heart of the church in that deacon meeting? And I said, I'm not sure exactly what the heart of the church is, but one thing I'm sure, those good men have stayed with me from the time I walked on this place and this property, and right where I'm standing was that old, remember that old Lutheran church school that we call the Baptist Youth Center, built in 1890-something, and an old beat-up house here, and all across the street was houses. And I said, they've been with me as we bought all the property and cleared all of that and bought all of this and built all these buildings. And together we planned the purchasing of all the stores over here on State Street and the building of the grade school and the high school and the college and the raising of budgets. And I said, as I went home, I got thinking about it. And I thought how they stood beside me. I know sometimes I move too quick. I know sometimes I get a lot of things and the plans and so forth, and yet those good men have stood beside me when I was right, when I was wrong, when I was up, when I was down, when I made mistakes and when I didn't make mistakes. You know why? Like one of them said not long ago. He came to me and said, preacher, I worry about you, and I worry about you getting us a foreign debt, and I just don't know what we're going to do. He said, preacher, he said, I used to doubt what you did, but don't doubt anymore. He said, I've seen how it turns out. And that good man said, preacher, I'm going to put all my weight down now. And Brother Lewis, Bill and I talked a lot out there about the men and so forth. But I'm saying, what the Lord has done here, the Lord has done, he knows what, the King knows what's best. Whatsoever the King doeth, that's the best. Whatsoever the King doeth, that's the best. I can't tell you why. God took Blanford Duff from us. I needed Blanford Duff. I can't tell you why he's calling, but I know it's best. I know one of these days when I see the Lord's going to explain to me all about it. I can't understand why Bertie Fields is not at deacon meeting anymore. I can't understand why Dave Gifford was taken from us. I can't understand why the Gifford baby was taken. I can't understand why the Cunningham boy had the car wreck. I can't understand why that Coffin family who prayed for a little girl, a little baby, and they couldn't have one, and finally God gave them, after many, many years, the cutest little baby you ever saw. And Miss Coffin driving down the expressway one day, a truck ran into her, and the baby was killed. And I went up to St. Margaret's Hospital, and they hadn't covered the baby up, and there the lifeless form that little baby was lying there on the table. And I thought my heart would break in. I can't understand it, but that needs to do something. I know the King, and I walk with him, and I talk with him, and I know the King, whatsoever he doeth is for the good. I know that, and I'd like to tell you this morning, members of our church, so much heartache, so many burdens. I said, you it gets to where any more of the time I get through counseling and I'm home these nights and I turn to walk toward the car at 11 o'clock at night, my mind is so heavy and my heart is so heavy and my feet are so weary and I think all the burdens and heartaches, and then somebody will come right in the middle of a conference and they'll say, well, I've got to see you, I've got to see you. But I've got an emergency here. But I've got appointments all through the night. And sometimes I say, oh, if I could just be two people, or three, or four, or if I had 35 hours in a day, or 48 hours in a day, so many people have burdens. And I know this morning, many of you, you rescue mission men, God bless you. I think of you so often. There are men up here in this rescue mission group this morning who have families they never see. I know at least two of them have families right here in the city of Hammond, won't even speak to them. Never see them. You don't understand it. Now I say this, folks, and I say it honestly, these men aren't mums up here. Some of the finest, nicest men I ever met in my life spend every night at our rescue mission. I never pass by it without wishing that somebody that had one of my dad was in a drunken stupor sometimes. I never passed by the mission without thinking, forever go in it without thinking, I wish somebody loved me and liked them enough to have one near where my dad was. And that's one reason I'm good to them. That's one reason I love them. That's one reason they're my buddies. And that's one reason they're not bums. Why? Because in some way the path of life has gotten crooked and rough and the rocks are jagged and the hills are steep. But I'll tell you something, fellas. Archie, put your trust in the king. Let God have your life. Yield your life to him. Nothing ever turns out wrong when the king's in charge. Nothing ever does. We have folks this morning. I'll go. Fella stood up while I go in the Pathfinders and told us what church he pastors. We have folks here. That's not funny to them. Because one day they had a little baby. And that little baby was so sweet. And they fed it and loved it and hugged it to their breast. But they noticed the baby wasn't developing just right. And then they went to the doctor, and the doctor had to tell the bad news. Maybe the brain was damaged at birth or something. That's what the fist mother had to hear. And the brain was damaged at birth. And you say, and they turned toward the wall, and they said, why? Well, I go back to my mother again. She went through that. First baby she gave birth to. Mother married mighty young. She was 7, I think, when she married. But she married, she was 17. And the first baby she had, born mother of 18 or 19. First baby she had, they noticed she wasn't quite normal. And she lived 7 years. She never walked. She never talked. She never said mama. She never said daddy. And I got a sneaking suspicion. My mother wondered all those years. I wonder why. Ah, don't fret, mama. The king, whatsoever the king doeth, is good and right. And it'll please you sooner or later. God was trying to train, have my mother sit there to train, so one of these days she could give her life to a preacher boy and try to teach him and train him and supply his needs. And now we look back and say, whatsoever the king does is right. Sometimes the king permits you to have a drunken husband. Sometimes the king will take a baby out of your arms. Sometimes the king maybe will put you through awful strife. And sometimes if you're in college, the king may want you to come up to the day before the bill is due to find out if you can pay the bill or not. Someday a little girl came up, that's my college girl, one of the sweetest students we have. She not multiple sclerosis, not muscular dystrophy. What's this thing when you have when you're born that affects you? Huh? John, what you have can't be cured. I'm talking about something else. Anyway, it left her crippled. And one of our college girls, and she's very, very crippled when she walks, but a very sweet young lady. We talked a while, and I told her, I said, you're a lovely young lady, and if you weren't crippled, I said, boy, I'd be beating your door down to get to you. But I said, let's face it, there may be a chance that you won't get married and you have to face life. The king sometimes allows that to come. Sometimes the king allows little Leah to have open heart surgery. Sometimes the king allows Lynn Smith to go to the surgeon's knife. I don't know why, but no, the king knows why. You know, that's the wonderful thing about it all. The king knows why.
Richard, I can't understand it.
No, I can't either, but I know somebody that does, and he never makes a mistake. No, he never makes a mistake. Whatsoever the king does. I stood out here. I was asleep one night, and about 10 minutes after 1, the phone rang, and there was a fire chief. And the fire chief said, "Reverend, you better get down there quick. Your building's burning." I jumped out of bed and put on my suit over my pajamas and got in the car and came down here. We just dedicated this half of this building out here. Brand new, 3 months old of the day. And over there we had the old auditorium. And the old auditorium was going up in flames. And this new building, we'd worked so hard to put in here. And suddenly it had gone up. It was going, the smoke was, you couldn't even see your hand in front of you inside this room. And all three buildings, this building over here was on fire. It burned to the ground. It burned down. And this one over here was a total loss. And right in between, the Saturday night before, the deacons had voted to put new fire doors between this building, the two buildings here, and the two buildings over there, because the fire department said the fire doors wouldn't protect us in case of fire. We had voted the Saturday night before to put new fire doors. And now the building's burning in this new building. And the angel of the Lord came and kept the fire from coming through that door back there, and he kept the fire away over here. But we stood across the street from 1:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock, and we mingled our tears, and we didn't understand why. And I walked around the back, about right here was a wall, and I walked around just about right where that front pew is right there. I put my hand on the back of the building. It was hot. I put my hand on the back of the building, and I said, "Oh, God, save this building for us. We don't know where to have a meeting. I don't know where we'd meet, dear Lord, if we lost this building. Save this one. I know the other two are gone, but save this one." Fire chief came rushing up, and he said, "Reverend, you better get away. You're endangering your life here. Get away." And I went over here to the Firestone place, and Jim Lyons, I was standing there weeping by myself, and Jim Lyons, my associate pastor, walked up and put his arm around me, and he said, "Preacher, you've been through an awful lot, haven't you, through these years? Awful lot." I'll never forget it. I was standing alone across the street weeping. I don't know who he was. I don't know his name. I never saw him before. I've never seen him since. He walked up. He's an older man. And he put his arm down my shoulder. And he said these words, "God's pulling your church together, Reverend, to get you ready for something big." You know, we've been through an awful crisis. Our church had had problems. A lot of the folks didn't like me. I don't know why. But a lot of folks didn't like me. We had a lot of problems. And I was new here. And we didn't know each other real well. And I had a southern accent. And you poor, poor, ignorant Yankees, you do the best you can. What kind of accent it is? You sound like tongue-tied to me. But I was different to you. You were different to me. And the Lord went down and said, "Angel, Gabriel, go down and strike a match over in that building over there. So don't destroy the middle one now. Strike a match there." He said, "I've got a church. I want to do something great. And I got people can't understand the preacher. And preacher can't understand the people." And that thing pulled us together like nothing ever pulled us together. I understand it now. I understand it. Shortly after I came here, we've been through a lot of burdens and heartaches. I began to get headaches. And I went to the chiropractor and doctor, everybody else, tried everything I could. Began to get headaches. Then began to see a blurred vision. And during those days, you'd be surprised all the diseases I had. I had cancer of the eyeball, and cancer of the migraine, and cancer of the brain. You don't have to worry about that with a fist. But I had all kinds of diseases in those days. And I went to the doctor, and the doctor sat me down after examining me completely, and he said, "What's happened to you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Your trouble, by the way, I guess 50 spots, and I don't say this much, but I have about 50 spots in front of my eyes all the time. Looking out at you, I can't see them. Every time I look at a blank wall, I can see them. I look up at the sky, I can see them." And he said, "What you been through?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Nothing wrong with you medically. Something wrong with you emotionally." That means I'm a nut. And
He said, I said, what do you mean? He said, you've been through a, what you have is caused by a trial or a heartache or a burden or some big battle in life.
And he said, what you been through? And I told him about coming here and the battles we had. I told him about what happened. I told him about a few years before. Now, the lot of word me. But I call them the Jesus spots now. They remind me that everything God does is right.
Amen.
Folks, listen to me. I know you've got burdens. I've been looking out across the building this morning and sharing them with you for a little while. I know you've got burdens. I know.
And I know sometimes you wonder, I can't understand it. Why? I can't tell you why. But I can tell you one thing for sure.
Whatsoever thing does is right. It's right. And it pleases me. So all you got to do is do what that deacon has done to me. Just put all your weight down on the king. My Lord knows the way through the wilderness. All I have to do is follow. Strength for today is mine all the way. All that I need for tomorrow. My Lord knows the way through the wilderness. All I have to do is follow. Got any rivers that seem to be uncrossable? Got any mountain you cannot tunnel through? God specializes with things that seem impossible. He knows a thousand ways to make a way for you. I got off the airplane on Monday afternoon out in town, Pennsylvania. What a delightful surprise it was. What a delightful surprise. Alvin Dark was there meeting at the airport. I didn't even know he existed. And he met me at the airport. And so Mrs. Dark also. And we had a little fellowship. He spoke Monday night before I did, and Tuesday morning before I did, and Tuesday afternoon before I did. And we're talking. Brother Dark said. Of course, he played in three All-Star games. He was... He was second to Stan Musial one year for the most valuable player in the National League. He was Rookie of the Year. He played in the World Series. He started the rally, the inning, when Bobby Thompson hit his famous home run heard around the world. He's managed pennant winners and world championship teams. He's walked with celebrities. And he has won. And he said to me the other day, he said, Brother Jack, he said, one preacher, when I was away from God, one preacher came to me and realized I was human. He said, all a lot of these celebrities need is just one preacher to care. And then he said, they're human too. I don't care who you are this morning. I don't care if your heart beats beneath silk or your heart beats beneath print. I don't care if you take a bath in the gorgeous bathroom of the White House or you take a sponge bath in a number two tub. I don't care if you drive a Cadillac or you ride a bicycle. I don't care if you own the place or sweep the joint out. This is a world that's a veil of tears and burdens and heartaches and sorrows and sadness. And all of us come to time we start to understand it. Why? I don't know why, but... I know him who knows why. And I leave this with you in close. You get in his will. You serve him. One of these days you'll stand up when you're 50 or when you're older. And you'll say with me, Whatsoever.
No exceptions. Whatsoever. No exceptions whatsoever.
King do it. He's right. Father, we've been down this trail before. We smelled some familiar flowers on our journey today. We walked over some familiar thorny pricks. We stumbled over some stones over which we stumbled before. We've seen some familiar scenery today. We have passed this way before. as pastor, I must come to my people often and remind my people that the King knows what's best. And so we accept, dear Lord, the sorrows and the heartaches and the burdens. We accept the sadnesses because we know all things, glory to God, work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. Thank you for knowing what's best. Thank you that you're always sitting up there in the high tower and you view the whole field. And when it gets awful foggy or soupy up there, I want the one in the high tower sees all of us and all of our destinations and all of the planes that travel on heaven's radar. So give us faith this morning. May we once again put all our weight down on Jesus, realizing that whatsoever the King doeth is right. Our heads are bowed.